Hello, everybody, and welcome back. This is the Collaborators Unite podcast. Chuck Anderson here, your host. And this is the show where we serve what we call big impact experts. And that's you if you are a coach, a consultant, or a transformational leader of any kind who is on a mission not only to grow their business, but also to make a big positive impact in the lives of others, their communities, and even the world. And so that's the great thing about our community is when you ask them, they will always say, first, they want to make a big impact, and then profitability second. Now, along the way, there's ups and downs, there's challenges, there's all the technical things, but it can also have a big emotional toll. I know it from time to time it has on me. There's times where we're super excited about everything that we're doing, and other times where it's like, am I really going to keep doing this? I think I'm going to quit today. And then the emotional roller coaster. So we're going to talk about emotional fitness today. And I have my friend Joe Pane here who's going to talk to you about that. He is an expert in all of those things and also a fellow leader in the transformational space. So you're going to learn a lot today. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chuck. I really, really appreciate you having me on. It's so exciting to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm literally looking forward to this because, I remember in our first conversation, we really did connect on all of this. And we share that passion for working with people in the transformational space. And so it's a pleasure to dive into this today. Well, I think a great place to start is tell everybody a little bit more about yourself. What's your story and how did it come to be that you are the go-to guy for emotional fitness?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I've got a psychology, sociology background back in the day and started my career in the space of rehabilitation counseling in the manufacturing industry at Ford Motor Company in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. And they were a prolific producer of cars. And anyway, I only lasted a couple of years there, Chuck, because it was I was very green exiting uni or college and 4 years in academia. And then all of a sudden I'm in this real world dealing with all of these different agendas and perspectives. And anyway, I got lost. And 2 years in, I didn't know what to do. All I knew is I wanted to exit. So I did. I didn't know what to do with myself. I took up a temporary job working in residential real estate sales. And that ended up being a 7-year career, of which the first 12 months involved a very rough introduction into the world of uncertainty, which is what emotional fitness is all about. And back then is when all of this sort of started, I guess. But it was a cold calling, building database, had zero to work with. It was literally knocking on doors in the streets, you know, literally phone calling people. It was tough, but I was motivated because I did not want to go back to my rehab job because there was no soul in that for me at all. And then about 5 or 6 years into that 7-year real estate sales job, I began disengaging unconsciously. I just started losing motivation, got a bit lost. The things that once excited me stopped exciting me. I had no idea what was going on. I just thought, what is this? Is this what it means to fall into some kind of depression? I had no idea. And so I took some time off. I took about a year off. And one of the most important years of my life, because in that time, I became a part of this community. I did a training, a teacher training of meditation training that lasted for this whole year. This exposed me to 7-day silent retreats, meditation retreats, vision quest, which is one of the most difficult things I've ever done in my life, which was just amazing. And it was just a good opportunity to sort of connect with, you know, whoever I was at that time. And I ran out of money and I had to go back to work. I didn't know what to do. I went back to my old real estate job. Didn't really belong there anymore. And it's like trying to put the toothpaste back into the tube. It's just once it's out, it's out. And in February of 2006, I made a critical decision to reconnect with my psychological roots and start my own training consulting business. And now I'm in my 20th year of doing this. And the emotional fitness work really is a culmination of the last couple of decades, and more specifically the first 15 years of my journey, where I created the emotional fitness formula, of which the pure mission of it is to transform one's relationship with uncertainty, which I believe, in fact, I feel very profound level of certainty that it is the single most, our relationship with uncertainty outside of our relationship with people psychologically is the most crucial psychological relationship we could possibly have.
I love so much about your story and congratulations on 20 plus years of doing this. And I love the transformation. It sounds like emotional fitness is not only something that you help people with, but you worked with on your own journey.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there was a lot of ups and downs. You mentioned the vision quest being the most difficult and challenging thing that you've ever done. So I'm sure there was a lot of ups and downs there, as there is with, you know, wanting to make a big impact and building a transformational business. And so talk a little bit about, I want to bridge the gap kind of like there. So you're doing that. And I want to talk a little bit about kind of who you're serving and unpack some of the lessons that you've employed. So now you're working in emotional fitness. Who is it that's coming into your world? Describe that person who's looking for your help. What are you hearing from them? What is their struggle? What is their challenge with emotional fitness? Or if they're even calling it that, it might fit under the emotional umbrella of, or the umbrella of emotional fitness, but they may be using other words. What are you hearing from them? What are they saying to you? Like, Joe, yeah, I need help with this. Here's where I'm stuck.
Yes, great question. My journey, and I'll answer that question directly. I'll just sort of meander just for a moment. A lot of the work around the emotional fitness formula has been me decoding the confusion that I've experienced in my life to make sense of it through learnings, et cetera, and study and all that sort of stuff, but decoding my life so then I can translate that in very real terms to somebody else's life. And that's where the energetic fuel, the passion for that will never run out, because I know that this is real. I've seen the impact that it's made on other people's lives. So the people that seem to be attracted, and this is not to sound ageist, it's just a fact, is that most people who are attracted to my work are people who are hovering around the age of 50, 40 to 60 years of age. And the reason why I highlight that as a chronological stage is because in my work, borrowing the language of Wayne Dyer, where he talks about the ambition to meaning shift, is that all of us at some point shift organically. It's not done consciously. We start to move away from the ambition-driven world, which is driven by materialism and competition. And it has its uses, because the ambition-driven world builds things. It's productivity. It does contribute to the world in the form of product and services and material stuff. And that's all great. But the person's psychology, the individual working in that space, there arrives a time where they start to question, what am I doing? Like, where's the meaning I'm getting from this? Am I actually contributing? There's got to be more meaning around this. And so there's this big revolving door that separates the ambition-driven world and the meaning-driven world. And the ambition-driven world is very egocentric, and the meaning-driven world is heart-centric. And so I attract a lot of people, whether they're leaders or business owners, especially people who are entrepreneurial, running their own businesses, have their own teams, because what happens, Chuck, is when you are going through this revolving door of confusion where your values and priorities are shifting, or the only clarity that we have is that I don't like this anymore, but what next? Like, where do I go from here? Like, what is next? And this can take form in the place of a significant values shift in a relationship or in a career path or the lifestyle that you have. There's something that needs to change, but we don't know what we're changing into. And if someone doesn't actually have the language or the awareness of understanding that this is a normal part of life, is that they can experience a full-blown midlife crisis of some kind. So the reason why I seem to attract business owners, coaches, consultants is because this confusion is amplified when you are responsible for other people's mortgages. When you have got employees or team members or other people that you're responsible for, and you're going through this as a man or as a woman, it amplifies even more when you know that, hey, I've got responsibilities in serving these other people here. I've got to take care of these people, but how am I going to take care of myself? You know, so that can really be a big problem. Into the meaning-driven world is like a rebirthing of some kind. It's a shift in everything. Identity, the identity part is massive, and I would love to explore that with you at this time in this interview, Chuck, mm-hmm. The identity part of the emotional fitness formula, because there's five kind of pillars, if you like, to I'll call it EFF, which stands for the emotional fitness formula, rather than keep repeating myself, EFF. So, and as a result of seeing a pattern of the kinds of people coming or attracted to the work that I do, I then decided to create a full-blown accreditation process so people can get access to every nook and every cranny of my awareness and psychology around what it means to become emotionally fit and share that with others. So I've had business owners who come along, get accredited, and then in their organization is the emotional fitness work, because I don't need to be there now. They are running that show. And it's also another way of putting this to you, Chuck, is that what EFF does is that it transforms and shifts cultures in organizations or in team environments, and also in marriages. So, but it's at 40 to 60 sort of age cut, because that typically seems to be for not all, but for most of us, a time where we're going through some kind of internal massive shift. And this is where we see people making decisions that to others make no sense. Whether it's moving countries, whether it's leaving a marriage or entering a new relationship or shifting career path or letting go of something that they've done for 30 years and they're doing something completely different. You know, have they lost the plot, man? It's like, actually not. They're actually rediscovering their plot. Does that make sense?
It makes more sense than we have time to cover. So yes, I have felt everything that you have just described. I'm definitely in that age group of between 40 and 60, we'll say.
And you're obviously at the 40 end there, Chuck.
Absolutely. See the grays there? That's definitely typical of a 40-year-old. And there's what I wanted to ask, because I do want to get into, you know, EFF and what, you know, what just the awareness of what people pathway can help with this. But I couldn't help thinking as you were describing this, that as people are, especially those of us in the transformation space, one of the things I can share with you is that, you know, you always feel like you have to keep you always have to be there for your clients. You have to be there for your family. It can be lonely sometimes because there's not always someone to talk to in a way, because your clients aren't going to support you. Your peers, maybe not. It depends, but we tend to keep it to ourselves. And I have been backstage with people at seminars where it's night and day difference who they were on stage and who they were behind the curtain. You could just tell that there was some things going on. But I couldn't help thinking that there might be some typical like triggers or triggering events or maybe some shifts. So is it like as we're starting to explore the new, is it a gradual thing that happens over time, or is it more of a recent thing that has happened that it's caused them to question everything, and then, you know, that might ultimately lead them to this big shift? But what's bringing it on to the point where they go, you know what, and they find you, and then, you know, they want to reach out to someone like you. What happened recently to make them want to look for change?
That's a great question. We need to pay homage to the fact that human behavior is very complex, but I've got an answer hopefully that is simple, but without minimizing the complexity of the human condition, right? So the shift is gradual. It's absolutely gradual. However, how we experience it is different, because for some of us, the experience is quite earth-shattering and intense. But how can it be intense and earth-shattering if it's a gradual move? Most people is that it's so gradual that it sneaks up on you like a librarian, right? It's like it's something that can happen instantly, but it's because most people have got a unresourceful relationship with uncertainty. So what happens is when they're noticing something is changing, most people either suppress it, repress it, avoid it, ignore it, try to justify it, escape it, go around it, whatever it is. And that it that I'm talking about is that feeling of unsettlement, that noticing or observing of, I'm disengaging with life here. I am simply not excited about anything anymore. What's going on? And the ego, of course, that's another layer of complexity, because in ego state therapy, it's stated that the fully functioning human being has got up to 15 personalities existing within them. Now, all these work together in symphony. But there's aspects of us that show up. You know, you mentioned some people are different behind stage versus front stage, where you're noticing different aspects of their ego, and different aspects of their ego show up. This is, I want to control everything. So when there's confusion, the ego tries to make sense of what's going on and just fabricate stories. And most of those stories aren't great, that they end in tears. So the experience of it can, for a lot of people, can be quite earth-shattering and intense. But the reality is that the way that this transition happens, it's happening at this kind of speed. But if we're suppressing, repressing, avoiding all those things I just said, we experience it as an explosion or something, because we get to a point where we go, enough is enough. I cannot avoid this anymore. I cannot lie to myself anymore. I have to be radically honest. And what's going on here? I have to talk to someone. I have to reach out. And suddenly there's an explosion of conversation, explosion of relationship, an explosion of expression, when this thing's been happening over time. And there's no timeline that is definitive, but it is a slow progressive move. It's like, we know, like I'm pointing over there because I can see we're on acreage here, and there's a nice patch of lawn or grass over there where I'm looking. And We know that the grass is growing, but we can't see it. We leave it by ignoring it, come back 2 weeks later, and there's been a shift. It's grown again, but we can't watch it and grow. This transformation, we can't watch it grow. We can feel it on the inside, but if we don't go and do something about that lawn or that grass, it's going to become hell for us at some point. It has to. It just has to. Where this work is really, really handy. I mean, it's handy for the entire process, but where it's really handy is when someone recognizes this, especially in the early parts of some sort of disengagement and shift going on, where these thought systems that I've created gives a person the power of language to normalize and validate what they're experiencing. But most importantly, Chuck, it gives them the tools or the thought system to be able to communicate what's going on inside of them. Because when we can communicate it through articulate, accurate language to the person that we love or to our fellow colleague or to our team, whoever it is, we're no longer disconnected and feeling lonely. We're now connected because people are going, oh my Lord, it must be so hard for you. And now we're talking and connecting and getting some movement happening. We know that nature teaches us that the only way to gain clarity is through movement. Nature dies. The moment something stops moving, nature dies. Movement is key. And conversations with articulate language and frameworks and thought systems that you've learned to language accurately what's going on for you, what this does is it's creating movement. Movement in relationship, movement in an exchange of ideas, a movement in, my God, I didn't know this was happening for you, Chuck. Thanks for sharing this with me. And we start conversing and you start getting clarity because you're now talking about the thing that matters. And there's NEFF, as I mentioned, I think there's, I can't remember whether I said this to you on air or off air, but it's all one conversation to me. There are five key components that I've identified through my own life. I've been married to Silvana, my wife, for 29 years. We've got 17-year-old twin boys. The reason why I bring that up is because when you have kids and marriage and business responsibilities and financial responsibilities and all these things, and you've got other and clients and all this sort of stuff, as I said earlier, it amplifies whatever's going on. So if you're experiencing joy, it amplifies that. If you're experiencing anxiety, it amplifies that. If you're confused by this revolving door that separates the ambition and meaning-driven worlds, it amplifies the confusion, it deepens it. So yeah, I'm not sure if I've answered your question, but I'm sure I've answered some question somewhere.
Yeah, you did, and then some for sure. And enough follow-up questions to probably fill an entire one-day workshop, but at a, you know, definitely makes sense. I love, you know, my, you know, the takeaway from my question is that there may be this trigger or this recent explosion or outburst or something that has happened, but it's actually been building up over time.
Yes.
And it sounds like that, you know, like now dealing with that is very reactive. I'm kind of picking up that dealing with it, there can be some proactive things to do. But let's talk about emotional fitness formula as the solution to what we just talked about. So first of all, what is it? And, you know, what's the process? How does it work to help people navigate this so that they can, you know, deal with this and then, you know, still have a successful relationship and outside world, but as a coach, consultant, transformational leader, make that big impact that they are on a mission to make.
Indeed, indeed. So yeah, the EFF has got five key focus points, if you like, and they're in order of poundage or in order of power or in order of influence in our lives. And the one that sits at the throne of it all, in fact, it sits at the throne of all of our psychology, is identity. Identity, you know, it's been said by many that identity is the single most powerful force in the human condition, and that is entirely accurate. And the reason why that's true, to give you a bit of a, I guess, a scientific analogy in a way, is if you and I, so first of all, identity, what is it? So identity is what we allow ourselves to be defined by. In my book, I share the detail of how what defines us owns us. It owns our entire psychological landscape. And most people are defined by the roles that they have in life. And inevitably, those roles will evolve or disappear or cease to exist. And for most people, that becomes an identity crisis. And this is one of the ways that people enter into this revolving door of confusion. The good news is that we're all evolving into our next version of our identity. So Carl Jung, a lot of my work is inspired by Carl Jung. He shared with us that there are four sort of phases or stages of identity that we all go through. You know, it all begins with us defining ourselves by our material possessions and our physical bodies. And we grow a hypersensitivity to people's opinions of our clothes and our house and our physical stuff and material choices and all that sort of stuff. And that's the other thing about identity is that we do become psychologically hypersensitized to when people are making comments about what defines us. So that's the early stages where we're defined by our material possessions. That's when we're typically sort of in our teens going into our 20s. Then what happens is as we go through our 20s and into our 30s, we become defined by a different archetype or a different phase of identity. And this phase of identity is where we're defined by our results. So our results meaning the money that we're making, the lifestyle that we have, how's my parenting going in comparison to Chuck's parenting? How are my kids doing in comparison to James's children down there? And so at this stage I'm defined by the role I have of business owner and parent, where there's results attached to that. So the results own my entire psychological landscape. So if Chuck comes along and says something about my sons that I don't like and it's part of my identity, I'm going to react to that and defend it to the hilt. And so these identities I've described to you so far, what Jung called the athlete and the warrior, is part of the ambition-driven world. And when we transform and shift into the meaning-driven world, we go into what's called the statesperson phase, where the core driving question in the early stages of identity is, what do you think of me? What can I get? Get the skill, get the girl, get the guy, get the house, get the experience, get the wisdom, get the qualifications, building, building, building. But after a while, that disenchantment happens and the priorities start to change. And this is where it aligns with your work, Chuck, because in the third phase of identity, the sales person, the core driving question is, what can I give? What can I contribute? How can I find meaning through impact? Through making a difference. We begin defining ourselves by the legacy that we leave behind rather than our material possessions and the results that we've gotten. Our psychology becomes more aligned with nature itself. You know, the ambition-driven world is about becoming a somebody. The meaning-driven world is about becoming nobody. It's the leader who starts to disappear into the background, empowering his senior team to run the show. It's the parent letting go and allowing the children to take over their own lives and create their own authority on self rather than us being that authority on them. It's all of that. There's so much more to this, my God. And then there's the fourth and final phase that Jung speaks about, which is the archetype of the spirit. And that's a whole nother conversation that we haven't got time to fit in here. So identity is really powerful also. And the reason why it sits at the top of the stack of EFF is because if you see yourself, and this is the scientific analogy I want to give you, if you see yourself, Chuck, as a 25-degree guy, 25 degrees, I'm talking Celsius, not Fahrenheit. So if I can translate that into Australian temperature measurement. If you define yourself as a 25-degree Celsius person, man, and you experience a 30-degree example, or you experience yourself in 30-degree version of yourself, what we do is we tend to sabotage, justify, procrastinate, but self-sabotage is one of the main things, to bring ourselves back to where we actually see ourselves as a 25-degree person. If you or I start to experience ourselves as an 18-degree person, we are naturally, organically, skillfully motivated to improve ourselves back to where we see ourselves. So however, whatever we give ourselves, whatever power we give ourselves to, whatever defines us, defines this metaphorical 25-degree set. It's possible, and as I've done this with many clients over the years, to become that 30-degree person. And you don't have to go through a crisis to achieve it. Because one of the things I share in life is that life is either squeezing us or we are squeezing it. If we continue to squeeze life and consciously invite uncertainty into our lives in a very powerful, resourceful way, and there's ways of doing that, we can become that 30-degree person without suffering the hellishness of a crisis point. But for the reasons that I highlighted earlier, avoidance, ignoring, suppressing, repressing, etc., most people have to experience through a crisis point. So that's the identity part of the emotional fitness formula. And then we've got the second part, which is life stages, which goes deeper into the ambition to meaning shift. And ultimately, the goal of life stages is to integrate ambition into meaning. This means that when we're in the meaning-driven world, we're still making money, but we're making money in a meaningful way. Through genuine value adding, we get rewarded, whereas the ambition-driven world is, I couldn't give a shit whether I'm adding value to you or not. All I care about is, am I making money? Are we cracking it here? Are we doing it? So that's the life stages, which has got a lot more to it, but that's the second part. Otherwise, I'll be here all day with you. Third part is emotional flexibility. This is really important when it comes to our emotional fitness. Here's something well worth your beautiful listeners here to note, and that is that emotions do not respond to facts. Emotions only respond to the meaning that we give the facts, to the interpretation that we give whatever it is that we're perceiving. And those and emotions are obviously very important because they flavor and color every nook and every cranny of our experience. But most emotions are fabricated, and we can be more resourcefully resilient or more resourcefully functional in how we create the way that we feel about something. And there's a lot more to be said about that. And then we've got the fourth part, which is values. Values are one of the most misunderstood parts of the human condition of psychology of anyone, because a value is a verb. It's something that we do. It's something that we actually perform. Sometimes what happens, Chuck, I'll be in an environment somewhere and there might be some values listed on the wall. You know, let's just say that one of those values is we value out of the box thinking, for example. The first question I will ask any leader, business owner is, how do you do that? Because if you don't know how to do that particular value, it's useless. It's just freaking words on a wall, man. So do you know how to do it? So a value is a verb. It's something that we actually do. And that's important when it comes to our emotional fitness, because it's by discovering your deepest desires that want to be expressed, whether it's a physical thing, a creative thing, a musical thing, an artistic thing, an intellectual thing, whatever sings to your soul, if that can be expressed and you can experience it in the form of some kind of ritual or hobby that you have, that brings you immense joy and brings you a connection, a very fundamental connection to certainty, because you feel nice doing it. You feel lovely doing it. And when you've got that taken care of, you can handle more of the hard stuff in life. You know, when you've got something to look forward to, like if you're a musical person and your deep desire is to create music on that piano, and you're part of a community and you're playing the piano with that community two or three times a week, or you're doing your lesson, or you've dedicated time to that, in the background to our psychological backdrop, you've got something to look forward to. And when you've got something to look forward to, you can handle any of the crap that some of our days can throw at us. So values are so important. And another reason why people get confused with values aren't clear, they confuse it with a moral compass. Morals and values are two different things. A moral compass is the universally agreed standards that we agree to operate, which involves integrity, respect, responsibility. Values are very individualized and very personal. But whatever raises your deepest desires is different to my deepest desires and compared to the next person. So values are really important. And the final part is perspective. In EFF, we teach you how to create a clean and healthy perspective, because you're going to need a clean and healthy perspective to lean on when things get tough. You know, has anyone ever said to you, Chuck, hey, listen, you get caught up in the weeds of life. Has anyone ever said to you, hey, listen, you just need to get some perspective on this? It's like you got to look up, get some perspective on this. But if your perspective is messed up, you don't have much to psychologically lean on. So we teach you how to develop a clean and healthy perspective. And that's the fifth and final part of the EFF. So you've got identity, you've got life stages, you've got emotional flexibility, values, and perspective. And they sing in harmony together to formulate a psychological symphony. It's just gorgeous.
That feels amazing. And I really appreciate the depth in which you described all of that, especially in connecting it to, you know, some of the challenges that us in the transformational space and big impact experts experience. And before we run out of time, this has all been amazing. And I, for one, want to learn more from you, and I know others will as well. Tell us, how is the best way to connect with you, and where do we start? Is there somewhere else where we can learn more about this from you and connect to you in your world. So feel free to share anything from your website or any free gifts or resources that you have. Where does somebody, let's give someone a place to start and then send me the link. I'll put it right beneath this video and in the podcast show notes so everyone can connect.
I will do. No, thank you, Chuck. There's lots of ways. The website's the main hub. So the joeparner.com.au, being in Australia, it's .com.au. And through that website, you can connect there's a free resource I've actually got on there at the moment, which is a questionnaire that I've designed to help you gain clarity on what are your deepest desires, what does light up your soul, what are your potential values. So there's that a beautiful inciting document there. There's my, through that website, you can connect with the podcast. And also I'll add it to the notes when I communicate with you with the keyboard there, Chuck. At Joe Parner Insights is my handle, my social media handle for everything, you know, from LinkedIn to Facebook and Instagram. And I post regular reels on there and the YouTube, of course, the YouTube channel is at Joe Parner Insights. So yeah, and also we've often got upcoming events for people to attend to see whether we're a right fit and whether we should be working together.
That's amazing. All on the
website. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And for those of you listening in and you're wanting to connect with those, just look beneath this video. I've got all of Joe's links right there. And if you're listening to this on an audio podcast, just open up your phone and whatever player you're on, and I've got all of his links there as well. So you can connect with Joe, learn more about this, and start incorporating emotional fitness and these principles into your life, your business, and, you know, notice the difference in terms of the impact that you can make when you've really taken this on and embraced it. Joe, thank you. You are amazing. I can't wait until our next opportunity to interact and to serve this amazing community. If everybody here could just change a few more lives and make that bigger impact, what an amazing ripple effect that would have in the world. And I think we all really need it. So before we sign off, any final piece of advice or words of wisdom that you have for our audience?
Two of the most important questions that near-death experience case studies highlights continually that we can ask ourselves, which to me is the plethora, the ultimate in emotional fitness, is how well have you loved and how well are you allowing yourself to be loved? I can't think of any more important questions than those two questions, Chuck.
How do you love and how do you allow yourself to be loved?
How well are you loving others and how well are you allowing others to love you? It's massive when it comes to our emotional fitness and our emotional well-being. Massive.
That is massive. We could do an entire episode just on that.
Maybe we should.
Beautiful word. Yeah, there we go. That's part two. Joe, thank you. And that's a wonderful thought to end this episode by. And thank you for that. And to our audience, thank you for being here as well. And I sincerely hope that this has inspired you and made you think about how you can use this to make the bigger impact. And we always often think about it in terms of what we do with our business and with our clients. But I would say in the lives of our loved ones and our families and our friends as well. And it's really just, and yourself, right? And so there's all of that. So remember that there is no obstacle too big to be overcome. And you might just be one collaboration away from a big breakthrough that you need to make the big positive impact that you need. And if you feel stuck or if you're unsure or unclear on or dealing with uncertainty, then I think Joe's your guy. Connect with Joe. All your links are there. And I want you to also take something that you learned here today and put that into practice. Take that step towards it. And remember that the mission you are on to make a big impact is something we all desperately need. You are worth it. You are the person that we're waiting to learn from. Keep moving forward, and we'll see you on the next one, everybody. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by the Collaborators Toolkit. If you're looking for better ways to grow and scale your business through collaborations and strategic partnerships, our free Collaborators Toolkit contains the best resources from our workshops, as well as contributions from our guests. These tools could be the missing link that you've been looking for to solve everyday business challenges and to access highly effective ideas that can grow your business exponentially. The best part is that these resources, tools, and templates are completely free and our gift to you for being a valued member of our community and a subscriber to our show. You can get free instant access to the Collaborators Toolkit today by visiting our website at www.collaboratorsunite.com/toolkit. That address again is www.collaboratorsunite.com/toolkit. Register today and I'll see you on the inside.